Welcome to the Football Fill-In, everybody. Sorry we were not here last week. Everybody just seemed to be on holiday. Nothing happened anyway, so we didn't miss anything. Don't worry about it. The big three all won at the weekend, including an epic battle between Manchester United and Liverpool. Why am I holding a pot of Vaseline in my hand, you ask? Well, Andrea Nana was seen slathering this stuff on his gloves at the weekend. I'm going to explain exactly why he was doing that. Also, some people are suggesting that Cole Palmer is a penalty merchant after he scored his eighth penalty of the season. I'm not having it. I'm only joking. He is absolutely world-class. What a player. And finally, one of the best endings to a quiz you will ever see. It's a football fill-in.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Right, Watto, we've got to start with the Manchester United-Liverpool game. So many of these games disappoint, don't they? You know, with the Man City-Arsenal game a couple of weeks ago, 0-0, ball draw. But from the very first minute, from the get-go in this one, it was just all action, wasn't it?
Oh, an amazing game. I think nobody thought we would follow the FA Cup game with such a kind of ping-pong game and an open game. I think, unfortunately, if you're a Man United fan, that's the way they are. They are relatively easy to play against, but somehow they've got something from the game. You know, Liverpool, again, I think they had 15 shots to nil at half-time and only scoring one goal. And while it's ever won, you're always in the game.
What do you make of Ten Hag's... He said before the game, he said like last couple of days, he said that Man United have a very clear playing style. We try to play out from the back. We try to get it forward. And I'm thinking... Really? I don't see any of that. All I saw yesterday was Man United being very open. Liverpool, in all honesty, could have scored five or six goals. They could have done. But it just seemed so open for me watching it. There seemed to be so many spaces. Liverpool found it very easy to get in behind. Is that how you saw it?
Yeah, I think Casemiro has run out of gas in the middle of park for sure. And every team recently, they've all run off him for sure. But I think when I look at Man United, they are open 100%. But when I look at Man United compared to an Arsenal, a City, a Liverpool, it's the energy levels of the wide players. When you see the opposition attack, it's phenomenal how many times you could put a still picture on and Man United would have five pictures players virtually out of the game. And the wide players don't work hard enough against the ball. That is a fact, but they give up so many big chances because they're so open. And the back four, to be fair to them, the chopping and changing, obviously a young player making his debut at Old Trafford yesterday, but you cannot keep good teams at bay when your back four is so exposed time and time again.
You've got to have that work rate, haven't you? You've got to have your wide players, your Rashford, your Garnacho. You've got to trust them that they're going to get forward for sure and you want them to get forward. But in the modern day, the modern game... They have to work back, don't they? They've got to put a shift in, like, but intense as well. There's a difference between getting back and sort of working and showing it and looking at the stats after the game and seeing that they've ran 11, 12 kilometres. But it's that intensity when it really matters to go, no, I'm going to get back in there sharp and I'm going to cut that off so it can't play that ball through.
I think that's my point. And it's got to be more proactive than reactive because, like you said, you can get your running stats up on that. But there's one example in the first half where McAllister plays a real good pass inside Garnacho and inside on the outside of the fullback, I think Robertson crosses it and Salah misses another big chance. But most big teams at that point, there'd be pressure on the pass on McAllister from the midfield area, but Garnacho's 3-4 yards out of position because he's sliding to block the pass. But normally the big teams, pressure on the ball is inside the game and he can't play the pass inside him. You force it wide, you make the game predictable and he's crossing from a different area. You're matched up in the middle. But there's no pressure on the pass. He plays a great ball inside him, but that's because he's 5 yards out of position, allowing the pass inside him because it's too late.
This is where the coaching part of it, so the hours on the training ground, this is where the coaching part of it is so important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because this is where it's almost like a cog. Yeah? It's like a cog. If the ball's over there, that player shifts around, you fill into that space there, you cut off that that midfield space there. Like you said, that playing the ball through the lines, nowadays, it doesn't really happen, does it? Not with the big boys anyway, with the big boys. But when you've got players that are kind of left to their own devices to go and do what they want, you just don't see it anymore with the big boys, do you? Because they don't stand for it. They want you to work as part of a team. But then when you get the ball, go for it and show us what you got.
Well, we'll talk about a City and an Arsenal later in the show. But the reality is, you can't compare Arsenal and City's workload to Man United's. And Liverpool's, you see in that game, the transitions, they're just wide open.
They're so much more well-drilled, aren't they?
I would say so.
They're so much more well-drilled.
You make the coaching point at the start. Ten Hag keeps saying they've got a philosophy, they've got this. It's very hard to see. And they certainly don't work as hard as the teams that are above them against the ball in the league.
Who do you think would have been happier after the result yesterday?
Man United, 100%.
100%. Can we talk about Onana, please? I don't know if you saw this. It was early on in the game. He's just made a save, pushed it wide. And he goes and pulls out a tub of Vaseline.
Yeah.
I know you've seen this before, haven't you?
I had this debate a long, long time ago in my coaching career. It'd be the same for you. Joe Hart started bringing Vaseline to the training pitch, and obviously he would use it in the match days.
This is with England, yeah?
With England, yeah. I'd never seen it before. At that point, it were kind of trying to keep it under the radar. This is a little trick he'd learned, and it used to cause chaos with my gloves, your gloves. But when it's wet and the balls have got a real shine on them, and obviously we were speaking off air before the game, at all levels, the pitches get watered. Yeah. But at the Premier League level, they're wanting to play really quick. And even yesterday at Old Trafford, they watered the pitch and it's rained for an hour before. And the balls are greasy and whatever. But the Vaseline somehow gives you a cling and a film to it. But as a coach, like, I didn't get as many pair of gloves as what you used to get. So my gloves were ruined after every session. But it's the mentality of you kind of couldn't fathom how it would work. But it works, especially on a really wet ball.
I think with brand new ball, and every Premier League game, by the way, the ball is brand new. Ball is absolutely brand spanking new. And they do come with like this film on it, don't they? Yeah. It's like it needs to be played with for an hour or something, or half an hour, just to get rid of this initial sort of film on it, right? So, again, couple that with the fact that when it's very wet, and they always are very wet, Premier League games, they water the life out of the pitches just so that they can play it quickly. It zips off the surface. And what Joe started doing was he was putting the Vaseline, and I mean smothering his gloves, a brand new pair of gloves as well. Yeah. It had to be a brand new pair of gloves. You couldn't use like an old pair that have got like the rubbish.
If it got abrasions on them, it didn't work.
No chance.
They had to be brand new. It like the ball. Balls have got to be brand new. Gloves got to be brand new. And then get your Vaseline on.
And like I said, I hated it. Because when Harty used to train with it would get on the ball. Yeah. And then when I would catch it, I'd be thinking, that's weird. That didn't grip the way that it normally does. I can just feel the difference, right? Because I would just like, I'd rub my gloves in the mud a little bit. I'd get a little bit of friction with the mud and stuff like that. So he would do that. And I said, mate, let me have a little go. Let me just practice with your gloves with this Vaseline on. And it actually works. Yeah. Like, it fully actually works. It sticks, there's contact, there's like a, I don't know what it is, it's magic. It's absolute magic, but it works.
For me at that time, as a coach, listening to the goalies and then me thinking, and I'm the same, I can feel it on my gloves. Yeah. It was just total head loss because I couldn't comprehend that it were going to actually help, you know what I mean?
Well, normally you think of Vaseline, you think it's slippy, it's slidey.
You just put it on my knees just to stop it getting cut.
Yeah, it's like a lubricant. Surely this can't work, but it does. So, Onana, keep doing it, Geez. If that's what works for you, then I'm all for it, mate. We've got to talk about Arsenal, okay? This time last year, Arsenal were in a very similar position, okay? And then, spectacularly, the wheels fell off. It's almost like they had this inexperience about them and the pressure got to them. But where we stand today, they seem to just have found a way now. They seem to keep churning these results out, churning the performances out. They absolutely battered Brighton, by the way. Absolutely battered Brighton. They could have scored 6 or 7. Do you think they are going to be there come the end of the season?
Yeah, look, we spoke last year how they imploded and we didn't really see it coming. But I think they've galvanised from that experience. They've learnt from that experience. On paper, that were a real tough fixture. Brighton had not lost a home game since August, I don't think. They absolutely dominated from start to finish in that game. And strangely enough, it could have been a lot more. I think they look like the real deal to me. I think they've got tough fixtures coming up for sure, but they've not conceded a goal in five consecutive away games in the best league in the world.
It's incredible.
It's incredible. Because even in the modern game, you get a VAR penalty or a free kick or something. But to have kept five clean sheets, it's saying here on the stats, since 1997, it's tough. It's tough at any point. But I think they've got some momentum going, and the front of the team is functioning like a dream. But again, if you watch that game, there's so many moments you've got. Havertz challenging in his own box.
Yeah.
And it's like a total flip to what we've just spoke about Man United. The work ethic against the ball is ultimately what's going to get you over the line, because you know you've got the players to get the chances going forward. But when you've got your whole team working as hard as what they do against the ball, and then on the transition, they're obviously, you know, very efficient. But they've got top players. And I still think they could have signed a centre-forward and made their life easier.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, penalties, Saka really cool from the spot, good finish. But then Havertz is chipping in with goals. Trossard, you know, I mean,
he's
raced from 70 yards. Never looked like you were going to miss.
The thing with Arsenal, the way that I watch them now, and I think a lot of this has come from Pep Guardiola, you know. So Man City have been doing this for years. This is why Man City have dominated English football for so long, is because Pep Guardiola's come in and he's obviously got the best players, but he's got every single one of them to buy into this team ethic, this team. This is what we do, basically. We work hard without the ball. We get back as quickly as we can. We do it with intensity as well. And then when we do have the ball, we show everybody what we're about. We show that flair. We take players on. We play 1-2 passes. The movement's incredible. And I think what Pep Guardiola has done has set a blueprint for Mikel Arteta to learn from. He's been under his wing. He's watched it and he's gone, when I become a manager, that's exactly what I want to implement. And I think it's taken him a little bit of time at Arsenal. It's taken him a little bit of time to find the players. You've got to find the personalities that are going to buy into that. But I think what he's got now with that Arsenal squad is exactly that. Everybody is technically absolutely brilliant, but you need to have it with that work rate. And every one of them players now look like they know exactly where they need to be at whatever time. Havertz, for example. If years ago, you wouldn't have said about Kai Havertz being this kind of player who works hard and rats and gets back and works as part of the team, didn't it? He's found it in his game now, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think Arteta has very much gone under the radar because of the fall-off last year.
Yeah.
But I think he's always believed in the philosophy. He's taken a lot of it from Pep, for sure. But they have a real structure about them now. And I think the telling thing for me were in the last 4 or 5 minutes when Saliba makes a massive block, Trossard's grabbing hold of him, Raya's got hold of him. And look, if it had been 3-1, they're still winning the game. But there's a desire for a clean sheet to win the game and move on. And they've got a real collective group spirit. Obviously, Odegaard is playing phenomenal football. And he's captain of the team, but I think they've got 11 captains. I see people all over the field being leaders. I don't see that at Man United, for sure, when we talk about them. But I think Arsenal are really galvanised.
Is that Arsenal centre-back pairing of Gabriel and Saliba the best centre-back pairing in the Premier League?
I think so at the minute.
It is, isn't it? I think so too.
Liverpool keep having the drop-off because they
one
have to change.
Yeah.
I think City have had, with Stones being injured, too many changes there. I think He missed a large part of the end of last season, didn't he, Saliba?
Yeah.
And I think that they were
that what killed him a little bit.
But it certainly didn't help. If they stay fit, that centre-half pairing, I think Arsenal, it's the best chance they've had, for sure.
And not only for the centre-back pairing, for defending, for the attacking as
the set plays.
Some of the set plays, some of the balls into the box. Did you see it in the first couple of minutes?
Gabriel should have scored.
Oh, my gosh, he should have scored. The goalie is going, I'm going to come. It's a horrible ball into the box, isn't it? The defenders have been caught cold. They've made the run on it, the Arsenal players. Oh, it should have been a 1-0. But yeah, I totally agree, mate. I think they are. I think Arsenal are going to be there come the end of the season. It's going to be one of the best endings to the season I think we've seen in a good few years.
I think so. It's going to be really close. Look, I think there's one point in it, but I don't think that anybody's massively going to be disappointing and drop off like Arsenal did last year. It's going to go to the wire. Liverpool, we just spoke about, I think they'll be hugely disappointed that they didn't win that game yesterday. But in terms of tightening it up, for sure, and then you step onto City and say, right, where does that leave City?
Right, let's talk about City then, because a 4-2 win against Crystal Palace at the weekend. But we've got to talk about Kevin De Bruyne. Is he probably the best player in the Premier League?
I think you have to say at the minute he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, if he's in their team, I think the what he's done. I think he's scored 100 goals as well now. 100 goals for Man City. He said in an interview after the game, "Well, it shows I've been there a long time, but you've been there a long time, mate, playing top football."
When you're talking about some of the players in the Premier League that we got, the top players, your Mo Salahs, Phil Foden ripping it up. You've got Cole Palmer ripping it up at Chelsea. Some of the real big boys, yeah. And I still would put Kevin De Bruyne at the top of that list.
I think Kevin De Bruyne goes in any Premier League team
any
now.
Any team in the world.
And yeah, any team in the world. He's a starter in. He could play in any league, any team, and he's a phenomenal player. Actually, obviously, it's a tough game normally at Palace.
Yeah, it is.
Half 12 as well.
Yeah.
Not a nice place. And actually, when you go 1-0 down as well, you're up against it. But again, the philosophy doesn't change. The tactics
don't
change. They don't panic. I thought Grealish played well. Yeah. He were into one of his old-style performances, hugging the touchline, one-on-one battles. But again, later on in the game, he's running back, he's defending for his life. But they didn't panic at 1-0. I mean, De Bruyne, we speak about goalkeeping a lot, but you could have two goalies in. They ain't staving that. It's the bend, the height, the dip.
Did you see the ferocity with which he kicks it?
Well, yeah.
If you're a goalie, right, and like I said, I played against Kevin, I played against some world-class players, right? And when Kevin De Bruyne gets that ball on his right foot, and he stands his defender up and he opens the goal up and he steps inside, I'm just watching that thinking, brilliant.
Well, but you know.
Absolutely brilliant.
But that's again what you talk about, and I'm not trying to be really critical of Palace and how they defend, but you show a top player inside on his strong foot, and we spoke off air about goalies, positionings and whatever, but you could have read that, you could have been in the position, but the height it goes past the top hand and the dip.
At one point, it's about a metre above the goal.
Yeah, I mean,
and it only is on target in the last
metres,
two metres of the goal, of the actual goal. It's only on target for the last 2 metres. For the rest of it, it's over the bar, but it's got that much whip, that much dip, that much pace.
But that's the one thing I'd say, technically, it's an unbelievable strike, but tactically from Palace... Yeah. Don't allow him that one moment.
You can't do that.
You know what I mean? I'd actually be standing here. So I'm saying, mate, I'm going to let you put it in on your left. I know he's still got a good left foot, but put it there and I'll hopefully my goalie will get it, my defenders will clear it. But as soon as I open up and say, come on that way.
Right, let's talk about Kevin De Bruyne's second goal. It is a left foot finish. And if you guys at home haven't seen this goal yet, please just go and watch it. It's on the Sky Sports YouTube channel. Right. His right foot is incredible. It is one of the best right foots in the Premier League. We've just spoken about it. This left foot finish, right? One, he's absolutely banged it. But two, the technique of it is horrific. Kevin, it is horrific, right? It looks like somebody who isn't so confident, isn't so happy striking it with his left foot. But the amount of power that he still manages to generate. Because I think Henderson, when he's in that position, thinking, yeah, sweet, shoot with your left foot, Kevin. I don't care.
Absolutely.
Especially the way you've just approached this as well. Yeah. It looks so uncomfortable, but he's absolutely banged it still, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's just swung right through it and thought, I'm hitting this as hard as I can. But yeah, I agree with you. Henderson thinks he's got it all day. Yeah. But the power that these guys generate now is phenomenal. And it's like a rocket inside him. And I actually think it's past him before he realises, because he's thinking... I'm all right. It's left foot. He's not, and boom, it's in
through bodies with pace. You've got absolutely no chance.
But he is probably at the moment. You know, City have got too many of them.
Yeah.
In truth, but at the moment he's irreplaceable in that Man City team.
Well, bearing in mind City were without him as well for the start of the season, just talks about the strength in depth that they've got as well. Before we move on and look at the bottom of the table, Watto, give me a quick Premier League prediction. It seems to me that it sort of changes week in, week out. I'm sticking with Liverpool. I think they're going to win it.
I think Man City have got the easier finish.
They have got the easier finish.
They've got
but is that who
finish.
You think are going to win?
I think they will, yeah. I think they've got the easier finish, and I think last year's battle to win the Champions League, he knew how to mix it up and pick the teams, and he already picking a team for the Real Madrid game in the week. I think with the game yesterday, Edison were on the bench. Yeah. I think he'll come back into the team because like Ortega's done quite well for him, but he'd be disappointed with the first goal for sure. I think Edison makes them a big difference to their team, but I think they are the ones to beat. Just when I look at the fixtures, yes, they've got a tough fixture at Spurs away, but I'd expect them not to get beat there at least. and I think they'll win the rest of them.
Just quickly, Champions League, do you expect them to go and win it again this year? I know they've got Real Madrid in the next round, one of the best teams in the world, but I think, I don't know if this is just me or what, but do everybody just expect that they're going to beat them again?
I expect that they're going to beat Real Madrid, and I agree, look, Real Madrid, phenomenal history, great team now, winning the La Liga again, but I think City are miles ahead of them.
Yeah, it's interesting in the Champions League, right? Because I think, we said this last week actually, a couple of weeks ago on the Football Fill-In, if Man City play Arsenal in the Champions League, I expect Man City to win that game, all right? But in the Premier League, I would half think Arsenal would have a decent chance, yeah? Some reason why, I just think Man City are the best team in the world and I think they'll win the Champions League.
Look, I think...
Is that weird? Do you know what I,
no, it's
you know
weird.
What I mean it, when I say that?
It's weird, but they've got a bit more pedigree in it in the recent time, haven't they? Obviously, they're playing Real Madrid and Real Madrid, the colossus of European football, yeah. But we still think City are better. And Bayern Munich are coming to Arsenal this week. Kane's coming back to the Emirates. But I truly believe that Arsenal will
beat Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
It's mad, isn't it?
It's mad.
Does that mean the Premier League is like a really good place at this moment?
Yeah, look, I still think
it has to mean.
I still think it's the place to be. It is the toughest league for sure. And I expect them teams, or the English teams, to go through the ties.
Yeah, well, we hope that they do go through the ties as well because we want that fifth Champions League place as well,
absolutely,
don't we? Absolutely. We want them to get as far as they can, do better than the German team so that we get a fifth European place. Right, let's have a little look at the relegation zone. A couple massive wins at the weekend, Everton and Luton. This has been huge for them two teams, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think Luton had been on a poor run, but obviously Everton had been on a longer losing run. Yeah. And I think the pressure were really stacking up on Everton, and Burnley feel like they've been in every game over the last 5-6 weeks, but still don't rack up the wins. Yeah. But for Everton to win that game were huge, obviously a massive goalkeeping mistake in it, and probably for Everton, who don't score many goals, that were
they're absolutely, but
maybe the only way for that to happen for them.
They were absolute freebies, weren't they? Again, if you haven't seen the highlights of this game, go and watch it, please. Burnley are the masters of their own downfall.
Yeah, I mean, Muric has come in the team and actually played really well in terms of his overall goalkeeping, but he's got the ball at his feet. He's not actually under any pressure, but as he's stepping forward with a ball, he's not really sensing Calvert-Lewin's going to have a nibble, and he tries to force a pass inside the line. That's
it's never
going to
get there. Even the pass isn't even
it's
on
not,
anyway.
It's not on.
Because the central midfielders cut the pass
off
anyway.
It's all closed off. Hey, look, the ball can obviously fly anywhere, but it shouldn't never have got to that stage. They get 1-0 up, and then they have a red card in the second half.
Well, the same thing. The red card comes from playing about at the
playing
back,
a square
messing
pass.
About. Yeah. They give another chance away where Muric has to make the save, where Muric plays it into the centre-back. He's got his back to play. Yeah. He gets shut down. They get a massive chance from it. And I'm just thinking, guys, come on, you've got to learn your lesson a little bit.
And look, I were up at Rangers Celtic at the weekend, and obviously the conditions were brutal with the wind. And I think, and you know, playing at Goodison Park, it's a fantastic football stadium, but you're next to the Mersey, it's blowing a gale, the corners are relatively open. Sometimes you've got to turn teams around and make a defender make a mistake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't always play the pretty football and invite pressure onto you. Massive win for Everton, massive win for Daishi. We spoke off air. I mean, if Everton are going to get docked more points again today or this week, I don't really know where it leaves the league because they can't keep having this 10 points, 6 points, going to do you another whatever. I think it all has to be clear to give the other teams a chance. But then you go on to Luton, winning a game like that. I think they probably thought the football gods have got to shine on them. They have the game called off when Tom has the heart issue. And obviously they go back to that game and the emotion of it all. The 3-0 up, they get beat 4-3. But then, really, the game was so open between the teams. Both teams at the post, the bar, or whatever. Bournemouth go in front with a fantastic goal from Tavernier. And then they've just still got something about them, Luton, and playing at home, Kenilworth Road. It's driving. Managed to get an equaliser. And then Maurice bullies the centre-half and like, side-foot little volley in.
If Luton stay up this season, do you think Rob Edwards has to be in for a shout of Manager of the Year?
I think.
Do you know what I mean? Just differently. He's never going to win it. Let's be honest. He's never going to win it. But I think he's got to be in with a shout, like a nomination or an honourable mention or something, to take this team who have probably, I'd say without doubt, actually, have got the lowest wage bill in the Premier League. Of all the teams in there, they'll have the lowest wage bill in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, we've...
To be in games as well. And I know they've lost a lot of games this season, but they've never, ever been absolutely pumped, have they?
No, and credit to him. And he should be in the mix for Manager of the Year if they stay up. And it's still a big if they'll stay up. If you think about it in realistic terms, obviously Forest have had points deducted. Everton have had points deducted. But the reality is, if them teams have broke the rules, they should have points deducted.
Yeah, I know.
So it gives them a chance. And I think if you look at the three home games they've got at Kenilworth Road, if they could take 6-7 points from them three games, I think they're putting pressure on the teams above them. But they've been a credit to them, because at the start of the season, I were thinking the three teams...
But everybody thought the same thing.
For sure. And they've done a lot better than
that. Do you know what? My only worry is for the end of the season is we're going to get to the end of the season. 38 games played. You're going to have three teams in the relegation zone. And we're still not going to know if that's going to be the final result or not. Because there's going to be rumblings going on. There's going to be legal papers, documents, lawyers all over the country looking at it going, no, we can make a claim against this. We're not allowed to do that. And it's going to rumble on for months and months and months, I guarantee.
Well, that's the one thing with the Premier League. Have to be really strong here over the next week or however long. But it cannot really rumble any longer.
Yeah.
They have to be very decisive. For sure, if Everton get some more points, they're going to go to an appeal. Forest are probably already appealing there, 4 points. But we need the league to be better than that.
Uh-huh.
Because if we're saying this is the greatest, this is the best, the rules have to be in place, and if you break them, this is the sanction, this is the sanction, this is a sanction, and there's no litigation, there's no appeal, we know you've broke the rules, so many points for it, and put it out there, what the points is for, what rules have been broken, tell us all, and we're all clear with it, because then it makes the league better.
Let's have a little look at the teams in the race for fourth and fifth, Aston Villa and Spurs. Spurs, we're going to go first with them. How weird is it, by the way, that there's a 6 o'clock kickoff on a Sunday night?
Yeah,
where's that come from?
I'm not really sure where it's from. I don't know whether it's because they were the Old Firm game, then you want obviously Man United, Liverpool on. You've got the EFL trophy final on at Wembley as well. But then you had three Premier League games. You've got the Sheffield United, Chelsea kicking off. Yeah, just real weird times. I think Spurs still look like they're the real deal.
Yeah.
I think Forrest will look back at that game and be really thinking about Wood's opportunity. I thought Vicario made an unbelievable
save, isn't it?
But you'd expect the forward to put that rebound.
Do you know what, right? We need to do a goalkeeping football show, right? Where we look at some of the goals that we think could have been prevented, some of the goals that were prevented with world-class saves, and we're going to break them down for everybody at home, right? We're going to break it down why it's a world-class save. We're going to break it down why he could have done better with the goal that went in. But this Vicario save, strong left hand, got down in an absolute instant, didn't he? Managed to keep it. It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Brilliant save. But I think he still does enough on his secondary movement. To put him off.
Yeah.
Because the hard part there is, you know, when you're at full stretch, it is phenomenal body strength, agility.
Strength to range.
Yeah, range. But then the secondary movement to try and get a block and a spread with your two arms, just to put him off. He just did enough. I thought Tottenham, over the course of the game, deserved to win the game, were the better team, had the better chances, even though Wood missed that one opportunity. The one thing I would say is that I thought they were very, very lucky when Maddison punched Yates.
It should have been a red card.
It's a red card.
It's a red card, isn't
and
it?
And it might be a soft red card, but with the VAR at the minute, I think that's a red card.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. He's got away with one there. My only worry for Spurs, we're going to talk about Villa in a minute, my only worry for Spurs is their next four fixtures, Watto. Newcastle, Arsenal, Chelsea and then Liverpool.
Well, the one thing for them is they've got tough fixtures for sure. I think they're well enough in front of a Man United, if we get the fifth place, that it'll be Spurs and Villa, whether it's fourth or fifth or fourth. I think they've got enough. The one thing you would say with them fixtures, they're going to have a massive, massive say in the title race for sure.
That's not what we want to see. Right, well, we're going to talk about this season's penalty merchants in a minute, which are guaranteed going to rile people. Because anytime you talk about penalty merchants, everybody gets upset about it. And it's said with very tongue-in-cheek, all right? So relax, okay? Relax. We've got to talk about Villa quickly, though. 3-3 draw. Seems almost like it's point dropped for Villa. But I'm buzzing because I've got Ollie Watkins as my captain in Fantasy Premier League this week.
Well, good news for you. I think my son had as well, so that's good news all round. I think Villa would expect to win that game at home. They're going 1-0 half time. When you get the second goal so early in the second half to go 2-0 up in the Premier League at 2-0, you would expect to go on and win.
Yeah, as one of the home, top teams. As one of the home top teams team. Playing at home, for sure.
And the real surprise for me was that Villa were quite open.
Mm.
And I didn't. We talked about centre-halves as in Arsenal and the pairing they've got. I think Villa have had a few changes at centre-half. And in that game particularly, I think a lot of the goals come down to positioning of the centre-halves and the marking. And it just wasn't quite right. Brentford, fair play to them on quick transitions and counters. But some of it were in set actions.
Yeah.
And the centre-half should do better in the set actions. Yeah. They should be tighter or in better covering positions.
Well, the volley. Did you see the volley? I think it was... it's the Mbeumo goal, actually. You're talking about defenders not being in the right positions. I think it's Pau Torres. The ball gets put over. And the poor lad is just... He's like tying himself up in knots, isn't he? He's kind of facing the ball. And then he actually turns away from the goal, does a 360. And before he knows it, Mbeumo's there. And he's got a volley, and I'm thinking, come on, that's basic defending.
And I think that's what Emery will be disappointed about. I think he's a magician with the tactics, and he'll not believe they've conceded three goals.
So very easy goals.
Very easy goals. The first goal, the other centre-half runs out of position, and it's a spawny finish. Right leg volley, misses his left leg and goes in. But the centre-half speeded the play up. He didn't need to come out of his slot, stay with him, and it's dealt with. Torres, you've just spoke about the second one, and the third one's the same. And like to concede an Emery team, to concede three goals in 9 minutes, and in the end, they're grateful for Watkins being what he is. I mean, they were probably a little bit fortunate that the cross has got a slight deflection, but in terms of the goalkeeping perspective, Flecken's too near the near post on the cross. And he misses the ball by 2 inches, and he's scrambled virtually 7 yards across goal to be level with the back post. If he's in a better position for the initial cross, his same footwork, he helps it on, he catches it, he punches it, and that's what you're talking about potentially talking about the difference between the levels and where...
And why goals in.
And why,
goals go in. So the reason why Flecken's got too close to the near post is it's safe.
It's a safe thing. Comfortable.
Goalkeepers are always get told, don't let ball in at the near post. Don't let the ball in at the near post. It's not really true anymore, is it? Because football has evolved so much that you've got to be a bit braver now. You have to. You have to cut little sort of like... You have to go, right, well, the chance of him putting it in that near post at zero. I ain't going to worry about that near post. Yeah. So let's take a few steps back on the angle
as
well.
And that can help me defenders.
And I'll help my defenders out at the back. But he hasn't. And when you get close to that near post, it's almost like you can touch it.
Yeah.
And you can feel
it's
just, it.
It's a safety block.
Yeah, and you can grab it. And it's like you ground yourself and you go, I'm safe here.
It's your favourite teddy bear when
it
you're
is.
A bird.
And if they put the ball over the back, then it's not my fault, okay? Because I can't get there. You have to be brave. You have to be big and go, you know what? I don't need my safety blanket. I'm going to take a step or two on the angle. And if the ball does get put to the back post, I'm going to help everybody out here. That's what we're talking about. The tiny little details, all right? Everybody does it, though. We're not coming for anybody in particular, individual. It's just the way that it goes. We like to break this stuff down and give you the reason why goalies do what they do. Penalty merchants, what? I mentioned it a minute ago. Penalty merchants, all right? Who do you think have been given the most penalties in the Premier League this season?
I wouldn't have known, obviously, without looking at the stats. I would have thought a Liverpool would have probably had the most because they're quick on transition and they'd really try and get after you in 1v1 areas. But obviously, looking at the stat, it's Chelsea.
It is Chelsea.
And that has surprised me.
So the stats say that Chelsea have been given 11 penalties so far this season, scoring 10 of them. Liverpool, 9 penalties. Arsenal, 9 penalties. Newcastle, 7. Is this a little bit of sort of favouritism from the referees giving all the big boys penalty? Or does it just stand to reason that the teams that get the most penalties are the teams that get into the box with the ball at their feet and they draw the defenders in to make fouls?
Yeah, I think we touched on it earlier a little bit. I think before the VAR era, you would have looked at a set of officials taking a game, and certainly if you're away at one of the big boys or the big boys are at home and you've got a certain set of officials, rightly or wrongly, you'd feel as though today we've got a chance of getting a penalty
because
of the environment. But with VAR, for sure, there's no favouritism and there's no... Well, we have had soft penalties, but there shouldn't be soft penalties given against you. I think what you're seeing here is it's the tactics of managers. You see, Tottenham are really low down on that list. It's that's because Ange gets the ball in wide areas, flood the box, and they get crosses in.
Yeah.
I think a Chelsea, for instance, will get in wide areas and they'll drive into the box and commit the one-on-one actions. Yeah. And they're the chances where you, with the clever players, you can get a leg and get a foul and get the penalties. It is really interesting, but I don't think you get the decisions that would have been last 5-10 years for sure.
Cole Palmer, by the way, has scored 8 penalties a season, 8 in a row as well. So Enzo Fernandez started the season taking penalties. He scored his first 2, missed one. Cole Palmer took over, didn't look back.
No.
You know what we need a stat of? We need a stat of how many goals get scored from penalties. Do you know what I mean? Overall in the Premier League. Because I think if like a third of all goals go in from penalties, Watto, then surely it's something that teams are going to have to start looking at. I know they've got set-piece coaches and stuff now, but surely it's going to have to be something. It's like the Wolves penalty. Did you see the Wolves penalty? Poor Max Kilman's got his arm out there. But if you're an attacker or a winger and you're in those little intricate positions, surely you're going to try and start looking at cutting the ball back but chipping it up just enough that it might catch an arm or like an outstretch. You know what I mean?
It's so difficult now for defenders and virtually any contact will allow you...
He knew it as well. Did you see Max Kilman's face? You can tell he's the most honest lad in the world. Yeah. The second it hits his hand, he knows it's out there. Yeah. He's just like, brilliant.
But I don't like to see a defender going out to confront, whether it's a centre-forward, a number 10 or a wide player, and putting his hands behind his back like this, because I always think the forward's got the advantage. He's going to beat you. Yeah. You need your arms for some stabilisation and to be able to adjust.
Maneuverability.
Yeah. But all of a sudden, you're using your arms outside the line of your body. And I think you'd be saying, and I think that goes back to the tactics of some teams, when you get a chance, try and put balls in areas. Yeah. Because if it does get an arm, I think virtually 99 out of 100, the referee's going to point to the spot.
It's a sad state of affairs.
Sad state of affairs.
It's a sad state of affairs, if that's what we're looking at nowadays. But this is VAR. This is what VAR has done.
I were at Ibrox yesterday, and Celtic got a penalty. I were at the opposite end, to be fair. Nobody in the ground knew anything about it. When you get home at night and you see it hit Goldson's arm, penalty.
Yeah.
But the atmosphere and the environment's gone because you've got no idea. And I think the VAR, being at such a big game as I was yesterday, it spoils the game. Yeah. There were 2 penalties given on VAR, a goal disallowed on VAR, and the ground's erupting and then dead because you're not quite sure.
Just takes the momentum out.
Takes the momentum out of the game. But the one question I would like to ask you, out of all the players, and we've discussed some top players today, but if there were a penalty against you in this Premier League season, who would you most fear taking it against you?
Right, there's 2 players. I'll give you 2 players, all right? Ivan Toney. Yeah. Ivan Toney, right? I've faced a penalty from Miz before.
He's only missed one, hasn't he? I think he's missed one.
He makes you look like an absolute fool. Yeah. What you do is you stand there and you're watching him and he's watching you, right? And he's sauntering up to the ball and you're thinking, do you know what you're doing here? And then he kind of just waits so long to the point where you have to make a decision. You have to, right? Yeah. And he still waits for you. Yeah. He still waits and he'll just roll it in the far corner. And I'm just like, this is incredible to have the confidence to be able to do that. He took a penalty for England, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago. You just know he's going to score it. I had so much faith in him. I'm thinking, you know exactly what you're doing. Exactly the same technique, rolls it in the corner. And then at the opposite end of the spectrum, Kevin De Bruyne. Kevin De Bruyne, right? He would put that penalty in the back of the net the exact same way that he scored that goal against Crystal Palace at the weekend. He would open his boot up and he would wrap the life out of it.
It's the pace.
And it's the pace.
From 12 yards, you've got no... If he hits it well and puts it in the... Even on a side foot, the power they've got, your reaction time's gone.
Exactly.
But like you spoke about a set-piece coach, and I've had managers talk to me about what goalies should and shouldn't necessarily do on penalties, and that's a whole new conversation. But if we think Tony's going to go with England to the tournament in the summer and we get to a knockout penalty stage, what are the opposition coaches, managers, goalie coaches going to say to their goalies? Because I'm like you, it's virtually impossible to wait.
Yeah.
And he waits so long for you.
Yeah.
But because you know you're going to have to move, he can just roll it in.
But the thing is, he doesn't even look at the ball. What?
No, no.
He doesn't even look at the ball, right? He is so aware of his body and where the ball is and his little steps, yeah, that he can just watch the goalie. Yeah. And he does just watch the goalie. Yeah. And he waits for him to make that one little sidestep, little something. It's in the other corner. Yeah. It's a goal. It's almost unsavable. I think the fact that he has only missed one speaks volumes for itself. Yeah. Before we move on, we've got the quiz in a second. It's just going to be me and Watto on the quiz today, obviously. Before we do move on, we've just got to quickly talk about this Wolves disallowed goal at the weekend. Max Kilman got onto the end of a corner, headed it into the far corner there. There was a player stood in front of Lukas Fabianski and they looked back at the VAR. They gave it as offside because that player that was stood in front of Fabianski was in an offside position and he was obstructing Fabianski's field of view. He couldn't basically see where the ball was going. Regardless of all of that, the ball was going in the back of the net. Max Kilman was scoring 10 times out of 10 every single time. Doesn't matter if Lukas Fabianski could see it with the clearest part of the day ever. He's still not saving it, is Royal.
He's not saving it. I just think you have to credit West Ham's setup in some way. I did the job for a long time, and in the latter part of my time doing it, we would have had a similar zonal setup, and we would have left the guy on the goalie purely because, in the modern age, if he's anywhere in and around the goalie, and our line's up, so even if it's headed from 6, 7, 8 yards, and we're up to 6 yards, and he's in that 6 yard box in and around the goalie, I'm thinking he's going to give offside.
Really?
Even though I 100% agree, he ain't saving it, he's doing nothing.
Oh,
but I think the setup from West Ham forces VAR to make a decision.
This is
offside.
This is what it's come to, though. Yeah. This is what it's come to nowadays. Football is, tactics and stuff, is making plays. Because of what could possibly get looked at.
Absolutely. I think in the normal game, without VAR, that would be a goal. But I had to think about it. Set piece coaches have to think about it. You have to make the system work for you. And even though I think it's Creswell trying to drop in, which probably shouldn't do, he should have stayed with the line of the zone.
To make it so clear.
To make it so clear, that's what we would have done. Any ball clear up, and he would be off by 4 or 5 yards. And you want the system to work for you. So I think West Ham have been clever, but ultimately, the goal, or the goalie, is never saving it.
Oh, this is crazy. So you heard it here first, everybody. Teams now are letting their goalkeeper be marked from a corner so that everybody can step up before that first contact happens. And if that player is in the field of vision of the goalkeeper, they are relying on the fact that VAR will take a look at it and go, nope, you blocked the goalie's vision, even though it went in the top corner at 100 mile an hour.
It
don't matter. There was a player in the way.
Absolutely.
So when it's come to VAR, get out. Right, quiz time. Right, Jamie, quiz time. But before we get into it, Darcy, hello, Darcy. This is Darcy, by the way. This is Luke, the editor's dog, and she is absolutely beautiful. She's going to try and help you out a little bit today because apparently last week or the week before, we had a bit of a cheater doing the quiz, didn't we?
Yeah.
VAR has looked back at it.
Yeah, we've had a little look at it, and Danny has been looking at my cards.
Shut up.
That's what we all think. And there was a couple of comments as well which sort of brought it to light. And yeah, we have a feeling Danny was...
Have we been checking on Goldbridge's wins as well?
Yeah.
I feel like I've got a chance today then.
I'm going to angle myself in.
Well, the amount of times that I've told you to sort of like put your cards up because you're like flinging them down. I'd love to play poker with you, you know.
But I've got no chance this side, have I? But even if I was sat there, to be fair, if I'd not got my glasses on, I won't be able to read.
Your eyes are buggered, aren't they? Right, come on then. Let's go, Jamie. 10 questions.
Ready. Question one. Shane Long holds the record for the fastest Premier League goal, but whose record did he break?
Oh, I know this.
Shane Long holds the record for the fastest Premier
League goal. I was there. I know who it's against. I know everything.
I
know the goalie.
It was me, by the way. Yeah, it was me. I was in goal. Watford versus Southampton. Shane Long, 6 seconds. 5 seconds, 6 seconds. Craig Cathcart went to clear. It wouldn't have standed nowadays. It stood nowadays, by the way.
Because Cathcart
cleared it. It hit Longy's arm, went straight through. He chipped me, 1-0. Cheers. Brilliant start. Keep it tight, lads. Keep it tight today, yeah? We get off to a good start. We win our battles, yeah? Let's get off to a good start. 6 seconds. Whose record did he take it from?
Five.
Sadio Mane.
No.
Shearer.
No. Ledley King.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
There was like 9 seconds.
Yeah, it was a long while ago as well, wasn't it? A long while ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have got that one.
Darn it, I knew that.
I wouldn't have got that one.
Question two. Which club has the nickname called the Royals?
Reading.
Reading is the correct answer. 1-0 to Ben.
I'm normally at it at them, yeah.
Yeah. Question 3, career path question. You're good at them, Ben.
Yeah, you are good at them, mate.
I have played for West Ham, Bournemouth alone, Leeds, Manchester United, QPR.
Rio Ferdinand.
Rio Ferdinand is the correct answer.
Yo.
2-0 to Ben.
Yeah. No cheating today.
Question 4. Got a little dust.
Are you going to help me? He needs help. He needs help.
I need it.
The Potteries Derby is a derby between
Port Vale, Port Vale.
Stoke and what club?
Port Vale. I got a Port Vale Stoke. I were in before it even uttered.
Right. The question was, yeah.
No
cheating. Is between Stoke and who, yeah? The answer is Port Vale.
You said Stoke and Port Vale, though.
Didn't I say Port Vale and Stoke?
No, you said Stoke and Port Vale. And Watto said Port Vale. So I'm going to give the point to Watto.
Yes! Well, that's when VAR's supposed to work for you.
It actually worked for once.
Come on!
I'll give you that just to keep it interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Question 5. Out of the current Premier League managers, who is the only manager to manage a senior international team?
Oh, that's a good question.
Out of the current Premier League managers, who is the only manager to manage a senior international team?
Really good question.
Thanks guys.
Do we need the name or could we just say the team that he manages?
I need the manager.
And we've got Iraola.
No. 5, 4, 3.
The Palace manager, I don't know his name.
No, it's not the Palace manager. It is Ange Postecoglou.
Oh my God, Australia.
Australia, yes.
Jesus. I weren't thinking of the big team, the bigger teams. Ah.
4 games, 1986 to 1988.
No.
I did not know this.
No.
I did know he'd managed them, but missed it.
There's a couple of other managers have done that under 18s, that's why.
But not the full, yeah.
The full, huh?
Yeah.
Question 6. Which Polish goalkeeper joined Arsenal from...
Fabianski.
No.
Not Szczęsny.
Szczęsny.
Yeah, you don't get two bites of the cherry.
You said it first.
Are you giving me? You can give me that, can't you?
I'm
because
give
we've
it to
Watto. Yes. Honestly, what a referee, Jay. Your comments are going through the roof, mate. Come on. Yes.
I am
brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. Come on.
What is going on, Das?
Come on.
What is going on?
What question we on?
You half said it anyway.
I know.
Question
7.
4 questions left.
Come on.
Got game week questions. You guys been watching the game week?
That's what we live for, mate.
Hope they have. Question 7. Who scored the last goal of the Premier League weekend?
Porro.
Porro's the correct.
Boom! Come on!
Wow, he's taken the lead.
You
3-2.
Pulled this out of nowhere. Out of nowhere.
There's still 3 to go. I've blown it before, Anna. Come on.
Yep. We've got a manager's career path question. I have managed Alfreton Town.
Who?
Alfreton.
Rob Edwards.
Why? No, it's not Rob Edwards.
Well, he's guessed, hasn't he?
You've guessed. Halifax Town.
Chris Wilder.
Oh my God, yes. Yes. It's Chris Wilder.
That's a Yorkshire one.
Oxford United, Northampton, Sheffield, Middlesbrough, Watford, Sheffield United.
Oh, I'd have only got it at the end.
Chris Wilder.
4-2.
4-2.
Wow.
Two questions left. Come question on. 9.
Come on.
Who is the only Chilean to play in the Premier League this season?
Who is Ben Brereton Diaz.
Correct. That is the correct answer.
Did you see that? Apparently, he got dropped from the squad because he couldn't communicate with his teammates. Apparently.
Really?
Yeah. No. Really? Deadly serious, yeah. Apparently, the manager said his communication with the other, it's not possible. So, I don't know. I don't know if it's true.
Do you think Marty Cash can speak Polish?
Yeah, probably not, no. Lessons. Oh, fair dues, Cashy.
Had him on the podcast, didn't we?
We did.
Did he speak Polish?
No.
He spoke gibberish.
Right, come on. Get me head back on this.
Question.
Come on.
Question 10. Which player joined Aston Villa this season from Bayer Leverkusen for 55 million
Torres.
Euros? No. Which player joined Aston Villa this season from Bayer Leverkusen for 55 million euros?
I was going to say a minute ago, right? We want a tiebreak.
No,
we
he's slow timing you. Know what? Get the counter on.
Do you know what this is a bit like?
No, get the counter on.
Do you know what this is a bit like? This is a bit like that episode of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Get the counter on.
Where he's still got the phone a friend lifeline left, yeah? And it's the £1 million question. And he goes, all right, mate. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, what's the question? He goes, don't worry about the question. I know what the answer is. I'm just ringing to tell you I've won £1 million. It was incredible. Search it up on YouTube. This is just exactly the same as that moment, all right? This is exactly what it is.
Well, come on, then.
It's Bailey.
Yes! Yeah!
Oh, yeah!
Where is it?
It's the Arby.
Yes! Yes! It's £1 million gone! Yes!
Yes! Oh, Darcy! Oh, my God. Darcy!
That is going to be gold. That's gold dust. It's gold dust. You can't get it better.
Darcy!
Shouting.
Oh. I told you.
Who was it? The Arby?
Who said the Arby? Yes, it was the Arby.
Who did you say?
Bailey. I'm sure Bailey signed for them from them.
No, he didn't.
Anyway.
Didn't he sign from Bailey?
Anyway.
So what I was...
Boom!
What I was...
Hey, well played. Well played. Time is out, guys, that's Watto on 6. The quiz is finished. The best finish we've had for months.